Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio's on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He writes for Pro Football Talk, and you see him on NBC Sports. You hear him now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So, Mike, with some camps already open and some getting started to open, we have an absolutely fascinating NFL proposal. Expanding the schedule to 18 games, but only allowing players to play in 16 of those, and the mind reels with possibilities. Well, what's really going on?
Well, you know, this is an idea that's been percolating for years. I first became aware of it during the lockout in 2011. Roger Goodell was doing an event with Miami Dolphins season ticket holders, and he was either asked to question. Somehow this idea came up of 18 with an individual player limit of 16. And ever since then, it will ricochet around every once in a while. But the fact that it was actually mentioned by the league during collective bargaining agreement discussions last month with the union, that tells me one thing more important than anything else. The NFL is intent on getting to 18. They're so intent on getting to 18, they're even willing to entertain this ridiculous idea of turning the entire competitive balance on its head and forcing teams to engage in load management with players and putting a starting quarterback out there with a left tackle who's perfectly healthy but isn't allowed to play because this is one of the two games per year that he can't play, putting fans in a position where they've been waiting for years to have Odell Beckham Jr. show up and play in their stadium. They've got tickets to the game and they're ready to go, and they find out 90 minutes beforehand that he's a healthy scratch because this is going to be one of the two games he doesn't play. There are so many unintended consequences that will happen if they do this. It's never going to get off the ground, but it shows me that the NFL is dead set on this idea that they are going to get to 18 games, and they're willing to consider ridiculous ideas along the path that's required to get there.
So one of the things, Mike, in talking with you over the last year or so that I've learned to check the temperature on when it comes to the NFL is just how much structure is behind a crazy idea like this, because whether it was the pass interference rule or whether it was the hit the quarterback rule, they just kind of made stuff up as they went along and then figured it out once the rubber hit the road. Do you get the sense that they've got structure behind this yet, that they're so intent on 18 games that they've begun to prepare for some of these unforeseeable or these actually foreseeable things since you've been bringing them up?
No, this reminds me of what happened in 2011 when they finally started to make progress toward a CBA after a five-month lockout. The players started asking for things that cost the owners nothing, but that created potential complications for the football operation. And the owners just agreed to it. Oh, you want reduced off-season workouts? What's it going to cost? It's nothing. All right, we're fine with that. Oh, you want no more two-a-days? Well, what's it going to cost? It's nothing. Okay, we're fine with that. And then the coaches and the front office personnel were livid when the deal was done. I think this is the kind of thing where the owners decide, if this would ever happen, and I don't think it will, but this is the owners saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. We'll let our football people deal with the fallout and figure out how to go about putting a competitive team on the field with this reality that they're going to have to tap every player on the shoulder twice per year and say, you're not playing today. So I really don't think that the owners allowed this idea to form the way that people in the media have forced it to form. And I think we've all kind of collectively realized that this will never work. So, yeah, I think this is just a situation where the owners agree to what they agree to, and then they'll let everybody else figure out how to deal with it later.
Since we last talked, the 49ers signed Robbie Gould to a lucrative contract, taking the pipe dream of some sort of trade to the Bears off the table completely. Was it ever a possibility? Was this just just leverage on his part the entire time?
Does it take the idea of a trade off? I mean, what stops Ryan Pace from calling John Lynch and saying, well, I'm glad to see you have Robbie Gould under a four-year contract. Let's talk about a possible trade. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen or that it should happen. But if anything, the fact that they did a deal before the deadline to sign franchise tag players to a long-term contract on Monday, that keeps a possible trade alive, really. Look, ultimately, it looked bleak. It looked like Robbie Gould didn't want to stay. And it's amazing how the tone changes the moment the money increases. And, you know, 3 years ago when Von Miller was going through his franchise tag fight with the Broncos, the Ravens were doing the same thing with Justin Tucker, and it didn't get a whole lot of press. But there were similar comments made and similar rhetoric, and, you know, Justin Tucker was exasperated by the process, and then all of a sudden the offers improve, and, you know, everybody renews their vows and moves forward. And I think that's what the 49ers and Gould are doing. And I don't think the 49ers signed him with the idea of trading him. But you know what? Every player has a price, and if the Bears really want Gould, there's nothing that stops them from calling up and saying, hey, what do you want for that four-year contract you just signed Gould to? Mm.
So I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan. I like everything that kind of surrounds him for theater purposes, if nothing else, and I actually kind of dig the guy himself so far. He's used national television to let everybody know that he's not a Hugh Jackson fan and that the betrayal Jackson going over to a rival like he did is not did not sit well with him. How deep does this run? Was there unrest as soon as Baker got there, and was it uncurable from the get go, or is this just a guy changing over jerseys and Baker taking exception to it?
Well, I mean, we saw glimpses and flashes of the kind of dysfunction that hovers around Hugh Jackson, and I think Hugh Jackson is capable of being a very good assistant coach with the right head coach. But we've seen now with two different teams that Hugh Jackson isn't capable of being a successful head coach. Remember that scene with Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley from the first episode of Hard Knocks last year, where it was clear that the management style for Hugh Jackson was as bad as it could be. And Baker Mayfield was exposed to that from the get-go. Hugh Jackson was determined not to give Baker Mayfield a fair opportunity to compete for the starting job. He was going with Tyrod Taylor no matter what. I'm sure that angered Baker Mayfield. But the thing that I love about Baker Mayfield, and I don't know whether he is still just too young to understand that the NFL is fundamentally a business, or he's suspending disbelief because football is more fun if we don't think of it as a business.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it is a business. Hugh Jackson got fired by the Browns. He can do whatever the hell he wants after he gets fired by the Browns. This isn't like defecting from Oklahoma to Texas. Right. This is a guy who got fired by the Browns, and he's available to go work with a close friend in Marvin Lewis and stay in the game. Well, what do? You sit home and watch TV, or you do something productive so you can process what you've gone through when you were fired by the Browns. And it reminds me of a comment that Baker Mayfield made last month about Duke Johnson at the mandatory minicamp, when he said of Duke Johnson, who has wanted to be traded the entire offseason, hey, you're either with us or you're not. Get on the train. The train. And it was like, Baker, the guy wants to be traded. He wants out. They won't trade him. So there's either a deliberate or an unintentional failure to understand that football is fundamentally a business. And I think the NFL probably likes it when there are players who help gloss over. Yep. You know, they say football is family. The truth is football is business. But we'll say football is family because it's good for business to say football is family.
While we're talking about this kind of thing, what is the latest status of the relationship as we know it between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I know how we can all find out the answer. Chris Sims had a chance to talk to Aaron Rodgers last week at Lake Tahoe for the American Century Championship. They walked a couple of holes on the golf course, and one of the topics, apparently, how they're resolving the so-called audible thing, that was the title that Matt LaFleur gave to it, this idea that Matt LaFleur's offense gives very, very limited discretion to the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. They call two plays in the huddle, and then the quarterback with the application of predetermined parameters decides which one he's going to call once he sees the defense. There's no freedom beyond that, and Aaron Rodgers wants that freedom, so I'm going to be watching that video today to see if he said anything enlightening. I have a feeling he probably didn't. But, you know, I think we just wait and see what happens to training camp and wait and see what happens in the preseason. And then ultimately, week in and week out during the regular season, will we be hearing things that make us think that Aaron Rodgers is defying the system, or that he's decided to go along with the system, or that they've adjusted the system to accommodate what he wants to do?
So, Mike, Monday afternoon came and went, and the Texans and Jadeveon Clowney did not agree to a long-term contract. The franchise tag is there. Clowney seems to have issue about being tagged as a linebacker as opposed to a defensive end. Does this end in trade, or is Clowney just going to get, you know, kind of steamrolled here and forced into the linebacker franchise tag spot?
Well, remember, after that deadline passes, you can only trade that one-year deal. You can't trade the guy.
Correct.
You can't trade him to a new team and that team turn around and sign him to a five-year contract. That ship has sailed. And so what are you really trading for? You're trading for 1 year, $16, $17 million. Now, as to the linebacker versus defensive end designation, a grievance is going to be filed, reportedly, where the NFL Players Association will argue he's actually a defensive end. And ultimately, it's like $1.1 million at play here. I mean, why not just give the guy the higher tender? He was arbitrarily held to a lower incoming salary because of the rookie wage scale. To put the rookie wage scale in place to ensure that the busts at the top 10 don't take millions out of the system that they never earn. Clowney has clearly earned the money that he didn't get. So why are you going to nickel and dime him? And I know $1.1 million in isolation is a lot of money, but, you know, the guy's making 16, when it's almost 16, pay him 17-1 and be done with it. I think at a certain point you run the risk of getting people in the locker room miffed about how the guy's being treated. You refuse to sign a long-term contract. You refuse to let him hit the open market, and now you're playing games with him over whether or not he's really a defensive end. I mean, the guy lines up, he puts his hand in the dirt, and he chases quarterbacks. What is that? It's a defensive end, and I think most people would see it that way.
We're talking with Mike Florio on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. And one of the guys I follow on Twitter is our colleague and or former colleague, not sure, Greg Gabriel, the longtime Bears college scouting director who now is working in the XFL. And I see him tweeting about these various tryout camps, combines that are being held. How is the XFL's business progressing at this point? I know not all teams are fully staffed. They still have plenty of lead time here, but are they on schedule and do they have money?
Yeah, they're on schedule and they have money because Vince McMahon has sold a boatload of his WWE stock to fund this thing fully and completely. There will not be the issues that the AAF had. Now, there may be a point where Vince McMahon decides to quit throwing good money after bad, but the money is there if Vince McMahon wants to fund this thing for multiple years without making a profit. And the thing to watch for the XFL going forward, when the NFL teams cut their rosters from 90 to 53 on Labor Day weekend, will the XFL swoop in specifically with quarterbacks? Because so many quarterbacks only carry, or so many teams only carry two quarterbacks now. That third string and fourth string guy who gets cut at the end of camp, right before the start of the regular season, will the XFL try to get those guys signed to contracts that cannot be broken to jump to the NFL when injuries inevitably happen to quarterbacks throughout the course of the season? Will that happen, and will that cause teams to carry a third quarterback when they otherwise wouldn't because they have to be concerned about losing that guy for the balance of the year to the XFL? That's going to be, I think, a fascinating push and pull, tug of war between the XFL and the NFL. And the XFL is trying to have a positive relationship with the NFL, but I heard several months ago, and nothing I have seen changes my belief, that the XFL is going to target those third-string guys with NFL experience, NFL preseason games under their belt, maybe some starting experience based upon who it is that gets cut, and then those guys will spend September, October, November, December marketing the XFL and getting ready to be the quarterbacks who, you know, give it some legitimacy going into their first season. Mm.
Speaking of quarterbacks, still waiting are the Cowboys and Dak Prescott on an agreement. Just looking through this. He was paid $700,000 last season, which is a bargain, even if you have questions about Dak Prescott as a quarterback. We were told over and over this was kind of a formality that they'd get this done, that the Cowboys and Dak were going to be fine. Are there issues now, things afoot? And how much of a precedent could his contract be for quarterbacks?
Well, the moment that he signed with CAA for representation last year, that was when we all should have said, they're not going to get a hometown discount. They're not going to be able to waive this notion that, hey, if you're the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, there's inherent value above and beyond what you make, so you should expect to make less. I don't think that's going to work with Dak Prescott. And, you know, one of the problems is how the NFLPA and how agents like to characterize contracts, because we hear about this new money analysis all the time. Dak Prescott's due to make $2 million this year. And, you know, if you tear up that contract and give him Jimmy Garoppolo's deal, which I think is a fair deal, $27.5 million per year over 5 years, just tear up his current deal, throw it out the window, give him 5 years, $27.5 million per year right now. When you do a new money analysis, that pushes it like to $32 or $33 million a year, because they take all those new dollars and they take out the $2 million that he's due to make this year, they divide what's left by four, and it ends up being a much, much bigger number. And that formula, I think, is an impediment, because, you know, I think at one point there was a report that he wants $34 million a year or something like that, and people lost their minds. It's like, wait a minute. If we do an analysis of this thing from signing, it is the equivalent of saying, you know, we're tearing up the current deal, and we're going to give him the Kirk Cousins or the Jimmy Garoppolo contract, and I don't think that's unreasonable for a guy who's been to the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, and a guy who I thought was very effective against the Rams in the divisional round, even though Ezekiel Elliott was held to 47 yards on 20 carries. Usually there has to be a great running performance for Prescott to have a great passing performance. I think he's maybe getting to the point where he's going to become a pretty damn good quarterback without Ezekiel Elliott having a huge night. And the bottom line is the Cowboys either sign him or they get into that Kirk Cousins franchise tag dance next year. And if Prescott holds firm, he'll get $25 million or so in 2020, $30 million in 2021. And then, he hits the open market and he'll probably still be, 28, 29 years old.
Mike Florio, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right, see you guys.
Mike Florio talks football with us on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, and we are getting close to football season. We've got our schedule. We were just going through it, the days that we are going to be in Bourbonnais,
yeah,
doing Bears training camp, sitting astride the practice field of those sweltering days. Go Bears!
Yeah, it's
damn right, go Bears. Come on, man, they're good.
I was looking at a weather report just for the rest of this week, and for Friday, it just said, you're welcome, it just said hot. I don't think there was even a number that they threw out. It just said hot.
Hot, yeah.
And I'm really hoping that it's not just hot for the 3 or 4 days that we're down there. I could use something a little less than just hot.
Yeah, I think just hot's probably a good
I think it
bet.
Might be.
When we come back, I want to get back to last night's Cub game and some outstanding broadcasting, some really good analysis. We're so lucky in this town. We are so lucky at this very moment in our baseball lives,
yep,
to be able to toggle between Benetti and Stone and Casper and Deshaies. Just whether it's what Steve Stone and their truck has been doing, breaking down pitching and using video, to what happened last night when we had the Anthony Rizzo collision with Derek Dietrich, or the Derek Dietrich collision with Anthony Rizzo, in the base path between first and second, and what they did right on top of it to have the video to describe what was going on and to explain something that people on Twitter kind of didn't seem to understand. So I want to give that a listen. It's cool stuff. Keep it here. You got Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I'm going to get into some baseball stuff, but first there's a terrific email that comes in on the heels of this proposal from the NFL saying, yeah, we're going to play 18 games, but you coaches got to figure out how you can only have players play 16 of those 18, figure it out how you want.
Except for quarterbacks, which I guess would be in this cockamamie scheme, they might be exempt from the 16-game limit or whatever.
Maybe. Well, Stonecutter says, I like the 18-game schedule because there's nothing more entertaining than NFL coaches getting the vapors over being even slightly inconvenienced. And members of the vapors. This would be great. Given the gambling implications, coaches will now be forced to answer who their inactive players are going to be by a certain deadline, probably Wednesday.
Yeah.
A side effect of this would be the coaches would have to identify if their quarterback or any other player is actually hurt. Because if a player is hurt anyway, the team will have to announce they're inactive by the deadline at least twice a year. We will get to see coaches who are worse at managing a clock and their challenge flags than your average Madden player, now having to figure out the most optimal time to sit their best players. Coaches will have to answer media questions about whether choosing to rest a star against a given team is disrespecting their opponents, and it will be a legitimate line of questioning.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick doing everything he possibly can to try to squeeze a few more inefficiencies out of the system. Bill Belichick being praised as a genius for how he manipulates the system, probably by some guy on WEEI who will manage to say something racist in the process. Every other coach then trying to copy Belichick and failing to identify the actual inefficiencies, hurting themselves in the process. And if this somehow were to come to pass, please, please, somebody give John Fox a job so we can watch him fail in spectacular fashion.
That is, you know, Stonecutter writes a good email.
Yeah,
but
he does.
Take a lap, my friend. That one's terrific.
That's,
you're right.
That's really good.
That would be a delicious football season. Weird. Not that it needs, you know, icing or anything like that, but that would be terrific.
You know what else is really good? Last night with Anthony Rizzo on first base and a ground ball hit to Derek Dietrich at second base, and then things happened.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let Len Casper and Jim Deshays explain, because some people were just very confused as to what was going on, and I thought they snapped into action, doing a very good job explaining what is to be done.
Not hit hard enough, likely for two, and we might have some obstruction here. Yeah, Rizzo's out. So that'll be the second out. And here comes Joe. And Dietrich did the right thing. He just went for the ball and basically let Rizzo run right into him.
Yeah, it's incumbent on the base runner to avoid the contact. Yeah, that's the right call. I mean, you could argue looking at that replay that Dietrich wasn't trying to make a play ball, but he was pursuing the ball, and then the hands went up as the collision was about to happen. I mean, I think if the infielder initiates, goes out of his way to initiate the contact, then Joe's got a point. But looking at that replay, I'm not sure I buy that argument.
What I was going to say is in real time, it looked like an obvious obstruction. I think when you slow it down, it looks like Dietrich was trying to buy some contact.
Yeah,
but then on the other hand, you know, he's screened by Rizzo.
Right.
So I think that's probably his best play to try to buy that call.
Right.
Right.
And I think what Joe is saying, what is he supposed to do, meaning Anthony, and what he's supposed to do is he's got to go out of his way to avoid contact. It's not like they're equal partners in this play.
Right.
It is incumbent on the base runner to avoid contact with the fielder in that situation.
The burden is on the prosecution, not the defense.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those plays where I feel like Joe has an argument, but they got it right, if that makes sense.
That was perfectly done on WGN last night.
Yeah.
From the moment it happened, the instant he said, I think we're going to have obstruction. And indeed, it's not a level playing field. It's not a block charge where they've got an equal opportunity to get to that spot. And yes, Dietrich is annoying. And yes, he did initiate contact. But there is a drawing of that foul where he's got to make it clear, I am playing this ball.
I find him really enjoyable. I like Derek Dietrich. I find his antics refreshing and somewhat comical. I think he's pretty fun, even if he is a little bit of a meathead. That said, he didn't take his best route to that baseball. the why of it.
He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to. The why of it doesn't matter. And that's what I have trouble remembering in an instance like this, because he is clearly drawing a foul, so to speak. He is clearly making sure that Rizzo, the lead runner, is out, that Robel Garcia is the guy on first base that he might not have been able to get, even if he does play that ball back. Because that's his next best play. If don't run into Rizzo is on top of his mind, like if that's the thing he's trying to do, he sits back on that ball, shuffles his feet a little bit, and then has kind of a tough cross-body throw to make to get Robel Garcia at first. I don't know that Dietrich is necessarily athletic enough to trust that play, you know, 9 times out of 10 or what have you. So he
right,
sees
a guy like Baez or Lindor or somebody right, in a certain situation.
That's
would
a
do
much
something else, right?
It's a much smoother play for them to make. Dietrich is a muscle bound dude who won't wear an undershirt and crushes dingers and is a ton of fun to watch. So it's probably top of mind for him to draw the foul, create contact, because he has the right of way. Essentially, he'd have to do a lot more, a whole lot more, to be ruled for obstruction himself.
It's still a ballsy thing to do. Rizzo's, what, 6'3", 250?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
6'4", 250?
Big guy.
But that's a large man who's moving fast.
Yeah, but it's Derek Dietrich. I mean, that guy is happy to be involved in a block charge play if it were one. I mean, that is absolutely the guy that slides in right in front of the restricted area as somebody's going up for a layup just to try and draw the foul. That Derek Dietrich is a floor-slapping Paulson on defense for Duke. Like, that's who he is.
Paulus?
Yeah, Paulus. That's Greg Paulus.
Yeah.
He's the kid who went and played quarterback for
Syracuse?
Because he had 1 year left? He's that guy. And I kind of love him.
A little Wojo in him. You didn't go Grayson Allen.
No. Well, that's the thing. He's not Grayson Allen. I mean, he's not out there actually trying to hurt people just to stop a basket from going up. Grayson Allen got tossed out of a summer league game. Grayson Allen's like 2 years away from being asked to leave a little league game. Like, that's not Derek
Dietrich.
He'd be
on that list, right? I don't even think he's married, has kids yet, but yes, he will definitely be on a watch list for that at this point.
Sir, you're causing a scene.
But every once in a while, you need one of these baseball reminders, and that was a perfect teaching video there. That is one that umpires can use, and that is one that you can show kids and players and say, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, that a really good runner, a really agile runner, is going to time, is going to chop stride and time it to try to not interfere at all, but just jump in front of the vision, jump get right in the sight line of the fielder while allowing him the opportunity to make a play, but screening him just like you would in the deep slot with the goaltender trying to track a puck.
That's a good comp. So here's two texts that we need to answer then about this play. One, that from the 77970 got this to 773 as well. The camera caught Dietrich winking at his shortstop after the play. So what? He is afforded the right to do what he did based on the rules of the game. If you don't like the rules, that's okay. Those are the rules. He gets the right of way in that scenario, and he gets to create his own path to the baseball outside. You know, the umpire would have to rule something. He'd have to be so far outside the move there. The other question there, 309, what is Rizzo supposed to do? Runner doesn't get the baseline. Rizzo just takes it out. What do you mean it doesn't matter? The only thing Rizzo can do is, like you say, chop your feet or stop. Unfortunately, that's what the runner is supposed to do. That's how the rules are drawn up. I don't know that Anthony Rizzo has a better option available to him. Like you say, if it's Javi Baez, he does the choppy feet thing and tries to distract as best he can. He could still even then be thrown or be called out in that play if he obstructs or interferes. I can't remember which is which. But anyway, he's in the middle of the thing. You have to get out of the way. It's Dietrich's ball to go get.
Interesting thought from the 708. So, Dan, you must hate that Dietrich play because it kind of reminds me of a James Harden play. Now, that's an interesting comp, but it's defensive rather than offensive.
Yeah.
Harden doesn't really bother to do anything defensively. What bothers me about Harden is how he games the system as an offensive player. You might take that as splitting hairs, but it's also just artistic with me. It's just aesthetic. It's just how it looks. And in the moment, it didn't bother me in the same way. I don't like watching Harden because I don't like the way his game looks.
Harden is on offense and initiates, therefore has more agency in the way he games the system.
Takes advantage of calls, takes advantage.
Dietrich has to react to both Rizzo and the baseball, and he made a savvy play. Maybe it's a little bit distasteful to you watching, but that's well within his rights and the rules. I get it. He's more reactive. There's a little bit more room for him to be that guy. I get it.
We have the Midday Midway coming up. I've got a new sport. I think it's a sport. And it took place in Finland, and they've declared a champion, and you're going to be introduced to a new... It's not cricket.
Okay, I just don't have the space.
No, you're going to be introduced to a new sport, because people in Finland are weird. They only have, like, 3 weeks of non-winter, and then they come out and they do weird things, and then they go back in the sauna.
We are going to shack a fool a little bit, and we have a... I have a report about a viral trend that folks are doing with their photos.
Oh, my God. We have to get to this.
You have to stop. You got to stop. Public service announcement coming up in the Midday Midway. That is next on Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Mike Florio talked football. We talked a lot of baseball. We got into a little rules discussion about interference versus impeding or whatever. There's different terms that umpires
use. There was yelling and screaming.
Obstruction or interference based on offense, defense, etc. And we talked about Albert Almora and his great catch and his brain freeze about not running to first and how they are deciding to respect 90, watching a new catcher in action, as Martin Maldonado really is a thing behind the plate, really is fun to watch, the way he cradles every pitch in a warm little nest that he has prepared.
Easy,
for
buddy.
It's perfect every time. I love how steady he is back there.
We will talk about what Maldonado means to the Cubs and perhaps what the plans are going forward. Theo Epstein is going to join us tomorrow at 11 o'clock. We also talked about a potential but probably cockamamie rules change to the NFL, the idea
like
that they may go to an 18-game schedule with players restricted to only playing 16 games so that coaches would have to name inactives and manipulate their rosters and all that stuff. It'd be interesting to watch, but Mike Florio, who we talked to, didn't think that one was going to happen. Two public service announcements. Let's make it here in the Midday Midway. This first, it is National Hot Dog Day. Dan, did you know that July 17th is National Hot Dog Day?
I did, only because of what we have coming our way in about 15 minutes.
That we do, looking forward to it. But if you can't be here and you're driving around looking for a free dog, 7-Eleven's got a couple quarter pounders for just $1. If you're into it, Portillo's apparently has two regular hot dogs, $5 all week long. Doghouse, free with a coupon. You've also got, I didn't know this one, the Wiener Schnitzel. Have you heard of it? It's a chain. It's in.
Yeah, but Wiener Schnitzel is pounded veal.
Yeah, no. This is the chain. This is the operation. You know, with the script W kind of thing is the logo.
That doesn't
have you
make
ever
any
seen
sense. This? Schnitzel has nothing to do with a hot dog. And the only reason it's Wiener is because it comes from Vienna.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know the etymology of the word, but they got five chili dogs for $5.
Stop taking the fun out of discounted dogs.
No, I don't like that. Wiener Schnitzel is completely different. It has nothing to do with the hot dog being called a wiener.
Either way, five chili dogs for $5.
That's pretty good, though. Yeah,
it's pretty decent.
Yeah, chili dogs are so good.
I've been on a Chicago dog kind of bender lately. It's I got three stops on the way to the house, and it has hit a lot of them lately.
I had two cans of chili last night. That was my whole dinner. I bought a bunch of El Ranchero tostadas, and I got two cans of my favorite canned chili, Wolf brand chili.
Oh, yeah.
Which is now only at Mariano's. I think it's a Conagra product now, but probably. Wolf brand is absolutely my favorite. And what an easy and satisfying and lovely dinner that was. That's not why you called, and this is. We've got an inaugural champion of Finland's heavy metal knitting competition.
I'm sorry?
I take you to Joensuu, Finland, with two U's. Armed with needles and yarn of wool, teams of avid knitters danced Thursday to the deafening sounds of drums beating and guitars slashing at the first ever heavy metal knitting world championships in eastern Finland.
What?
Crank it, Campy. The stage names, such as Wolfumes, Bunny Bandit, and Nine Inch Needles, the participants shared a simple goal to showcase their knitting skills while dancing to heavy metal music in the most outlandish way possible. They talked to a woman named Heather McLaren, who's a PhD engineering student who traveled from Scotland for a shot at the world title. It's a town close to the Russian border. A group of about 200 people watched the performances. And the this is insane. And they had participants from 9 countries, including the United States, Japan, and Russia. They put on performances full of theatrics, passion, and drama. They were judged by a jury. It was a Japanese performance by a 5-person team called Giga Body Metal that clinched the title with a show featuring sumo wrestlers and a man dressed in a traditional Japanese kimono.
Oh, you can't beat that.
So they are headbanging and they are knitting.
But what did they knit?
I think you could knit whatever. I don't know if they're knitting Afghans or booties or
I would imagine you get more points for knitting more complicated things while you're going through this.
I don't know.
I mean, you can't just knit a scarf, right? I'm sure knitting a scarf is hard, but that seems, you know, much easier than knitting gloves with fingers.
So, Dan, are you saying there were booties everywhere?
Camp, ladies and gentlemen.
Deserves all the Zackles. Speaking of Zackles, we may have some here. Shaquille O'Neal on national television some years ago was opining about the job Phil Jackson did in getting as many teams to the finals as he did. I know this because Steve Kerr took to Twitter to remind Shaq what he promised he would do should... You know what? I'll let Shaq explain it. Here he is.
If a coach takes a team to the finals, 4 out of 5 years, I'll kiss his feet on Fear Factor with cheese on it. I will. It'll never be done again.
Okay. Lots to break down here.
Yeah.
One, clearly Shaq has committed to this. He said he would do it. He now needs to do it because Steve Kerr has accomplished those goals. Second, Fear Factor is no longer a television show, am I right? So we would need we need Joe Rogan to come back and host the Fear Factor show for a one-off episode. And we would need that also means because Steve Kerr tweeted it, it means he's willing to cover his feet in cheese, yes?
I guess.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen for this to work out for Shaq, and or for Steve, I guess, if he's into the whole cheese-covered feet kiss thing. It seems odd.
That was one of the bands.
Cheese-covered feet kiss thing. But I'm on board, and I would watch that episode of Fear Factor if it came back.
Do you remember Big Baller Brand?
Vaguely. I've tried to forget.
Well, this may be a sign of the state of the Big Baller Brand empire. Because you remember those Zoe 2 sneakers that were once $400 or $500? They had little shower slides that were $150. Well, the Triple B's struggled. They have not been doing well. They have not sold enough shoes. They have gotten a failing grade from the other BBB, the Better Business Bureau. And then the Ball Brothers themselves decided they didn't want to be a part of Big Baller Brand. And Lonzo changed his Big Baller Brand tattoo. Some photos were surfacing on Twitter from the weekend. There was a volleyball tournament going on outside of Los Angeles. And Big Baller was selling its T-shirts. It was just a guy selling T-shirts, and he had a dry erase board. It says, clearance sale, cash only, all Big Baller Brand stuff, the Big Baller Brand table draping out there. $5 T-shirts. Hoodies were under $20.
Ooh.
And Big Baller Brand was offering a $100 bundle that included shoes that were previously priced at $400.
I feel like you missed your chance. You could have supplemented your marathon wardrobe with Big Baller Brand stuff.
Oh, I'm still open to it. Because now, okay. Here's the thing. if you're ironically wearing Big Baller Brand now, see, now we're getting to the point where it might be cool.
It's like the Fire Festival stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to wear that.
Look at this summer league while everybody's wearing. I saw a picture of a Jorge Garbajosa Raptors jersey.
Nice.
At summer league. So, yeah, you can be along with those guys that are wearing just bad player jerseys.
This from the Post. And listen up. The Erie Face App Photo Filter, which uses artificial intelligence to digitally age your face, has gone viral, with millions on social media sharing their sagging simulacrum, including celebrities like Drake, the Jonas Brothers, Kevin Hart, and Dan Bernstein. However, experts warn that the free old age filter created in 2017 by developers at Wireless Lab in St. Petersburg, Russia, poses security concerns that may give them access to your personal information and identity. The Russian app is one of the most downloaded across the globe, with fans on social media using the hashtag FaceAppChallenge to share their results. The tool augments your face to look double or triple your current age, with wrinkles, sagging, yellow teeth, all that kind of stuff. It also allows...
I think Cody Westerlund was doing it to us.
Yeah, no, right? It's posted. It's up there.
That's not our data.
No, it's not our data. It's the scores, and hopefully we get away with one there.
I did it, actually, but I did send them all your personal info, just to be safe.
Good. Did you get the new passwords for all of my bank accounts?
Yeah, and your social.
Excellent.
Appreciate that.
So it allows you to... Face app, which you grant permission to access your photo gallery... also includes in their terms and conditions that they have the right to modify, reproduce, and publish any of the images you process through its AI. That means your face could be end up being commercialized or worse. That means they can also use your real name, your username, or any likeness provided in any format without notifying, much less paying you. They can retain that material as long as they want, even after you delete the app, and you won't be able to stop them. Even those who set their Apple iOS photo permissions to never, as TechCrunch points out, are not protected against the terms. The Post goes on to deliver a bunch of other issues concerning the Face app thing. Stop doing it. It's hacking. It's not hacking. It's... you're giving it your phone. You are giving this thing your phone. Stop doing it.
That is the midday midway that we do most days at 10:40 or so up until this point. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be getting ready to have a baseball conversation with Theo Epstein. But what we're going to do today is get into not just what last night's game meant for the White Sox, but this stumble out of the gate in the second half of the season. It might be changing the way the Sox try to maximize what this chunk of a season means in their rebuild and how they can continue to get closer to winning a World Series.
Also this, apparently Fear Factor is still a show. It's hosted by Ludacris on MTV, to which I say, yeah. I probably wouldn't watch that. That's where we're headed next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.